Building a program that understands its surroundings as well as we do, it's a real challenge. Imagine software that can adapt to your location. Software that anticipates your needs and interacts seamlessly with the physical world.
This is the challenge of context recognition. It really is a fascinating area.
And it's vital for many of the technologies we depend on.
It is. Things like smartphones.
Smartphones that silence notifications when you're in a meeting.
Wearables that track our fitness activities.
Exactly. And in this deep dive, we're going back in time, back to 2006, to a research paper.
Okay.
It's titled Distributed Modular Toolbox for Multimodal Context Recognition. Gives us a snapshot of the state of the art then. And it reveals some foundational principles of context-aware computing, principles that are still shaping the field.
Even back then, the researchers knew. They knew how complex it was to gather and interpret data from all these different sources. They recognized that context awareness wasn't just about collecting data. It was about making that data meaningful.
And the paper, it really digs into the hurdles they faced. One major challenge, working with these distributed sensors.
Each with its own quirks.
Right. Each with its own data type and rate.
Exactly. It wasn't as simple as just receiving a stream of numbers. Think about a system that uses your phone's accelerometer, your GPS, even your microphone, all at the same time.
Wow.
Each sensor working in its own way, generating different data types at different speeds.
And trying to combine all of that data in real time.
In real time, that's the challenge. That's a significant obstacle.
And on top of all that, these systems, especially back in 2006, they had to work on devices with limited processing power, limited battery life.
You're right, a huge constraint.
It's like trying to put together this intricate puzzle.
In a confined space.
Yes.
Yeah.
In a confined space with a fading light source.
Researchers had to be clever. They had to find efficient algorithms and processing methods. Otherwise, they'd waste computational resources or drain the device's battery in no time.
Okay, so that leads us to their toolbox approach. Trying to tackle those obstacles head on.
They developed the Context Recognition Network Toolbox, the CRN Toolbox, their idea, to create a system that would streamline the development of context-aware applications. And they did that by providing a set of pre-built modules, reusable modules.
So instead of starting from scratch every time,
researchers could use these pre-built elements
that focus on the unique parts of their application.
Exactly. Modularity was key in their design. They envisioned a system where developers could pick and choose, select the components they needed, whether it was a filter, a classifier, a specific sensor interface, and connect them seamlessly.
It sounds a lot like how we build software today, you know, using libraries and frameworks.
Yeah.
Did they specify specific types of modules in this toolbox?
They did. The paper highlights some key features that really made this toolbox innovative. Firstly, they designed the modular components to handle a variety of tasks. These weren't just generic building blocks. They provided specialized tools for filtering information from sensor data, for classifying activities based on patterns, things like that. Lots of other tools.
So it was a collection of these specialized data processing tools, each one designed for a specific purpose.
Exactly. That variety was essential for managing all the different types of sensor data and for handling the complexity of the analysis tasks. But modularity was only one part of the solution. They also addressed data flow management.
Could you expand on that? What made data flow such a big deal in this context?
Well, the system has to handle multiple sensors, sensors sending data at different rates. It needed a way to synchronize, to merge, and to route all of this data. Efficiently, of course. The CRN toolbox, it provided a framework to deal with all of this behind the scenes. Researchers wouldn't need to get bogged down in the details of synchronization. Not every time they started a new application.
That's huge. It's like having a conductor coordinating this complex orchestra,
mm-hmm.
making sure all the instruments work together.
That's a good way to put it. This coordination, it was absolutely essential for systems that had to respond intelligently to changes in context in real time. And then there was another challenge. They recognized they needed hardware abstraction. You see, mobile devices back then, well, there was a lot of variation in terms of processing power, in terms of sensor capability.
So they couldn't design for one specific phone or one PDA. They needed a system that could work on a range of devices.
Exactly. And their toolbox solved that problem. It introduced a layer of abstraction over the hardware. This meant developers could write code once, and theoretically it would work on different devices, devices with different sensors, made development much simpler, and it made their applications more portable.
They were thinking ahead. weren't they? Anticipating the challenges of a multi-device world. But how did they deal with those limitations in processing power, especially for more complex applications?
Well, that's where distributed execution comes in. They realized that not all the processing had to happen on the mobile device itself. Their toolbox allowed them to offload certain tasks to more powerful machines, servers, for instance. They would communicate wirelessly.
Like how our smartphones offload computationally intensive tasks to the cloud.
Exactly. It was an advanced approach for its time. It let them overcome the limitations of those early mobile devices and build more complex, more resource-demanding, context-aware applications. But they didn't just build a toolbox. They wanted to demonstrate its potential in real-world scenarios.
That's where their case studies come in, right? Putting the toolbox to the test.
Exactly. They focused on two main examples. The first one was all about activity recognition during assembly tasks, the kind of tasks you might find in a manufacturing setting.
So imagine a system that can tell if someone is hammering, sawing, or doing other actions just by using sensors. What kind of data did they use for that?
They used motion data collected from sensors worn by the user, the goal, to identify those specific activities just from the patterns in their movements. The second case study, it focused on a gesture-controlled document browser.
That sounds incredibly futuristic for 2006. A gesture-controlled system. Tell me more.
Imagine a doctor making their rounds. They need to access patient records, but their hands are busy. This system, it would let a doctor use hand gestures to scroll through documents, even open them, and all while wearing a small computer and a motion sensor.
Wow. Did they go into detail about how it actually worked? What sensors did they use?
They used a combination, a wearable computer paired with a motion sensor. The sensor was placed on the doctor's arm. It tracked the arm's orientation, the movements. That way, it could recognize specific gestures.
It's amazing to think that they were already laying the groundwork for these kinds of intuitive interfaces. But even with all that, this research did have its limits. Even the authors said so.
Right. They knew their toolbox was good, but they also knew it could be improved. One thing they pointed out was dynamic reconfiguration. Back then, their system couldn't really adapt to changes, not without a lot of manual adjustments.
So say a new sensor was added, or the user moved to a different room, the system couldn't adjust on the fly.
Exactly. Yeah. It wasn't as adaptable as we expect modern systems to be. They also knew they needed better resource management because, well, they were working with limited resources, especially on those mobile devices. Things like power consumption, those were crucial to optimize.
Makes sense. Getting something to work in the lab is one thing, but making sure it runs smoothly, efficiently, on a device someone is carrying around all day, that's another story.
Exactly. But even with those limitations, this research, it was groundbreaking. It showed that you could build these distributed modular systems for context recognition, and it laid the foundation for a lot of the tools and concepts we still use.
It's like comparing one of those early cars, you know, the really basic ones, to a modern electric car.
I see what you mean.
They both get you from point A to point B. But the technology, the sophistication, it's night and day.
That's a good analogy. This paper really gives us a window into the early days of context-aware computing. And it highlights how far we've come. We might not be directly referencing this specific research today, but its impact, we see it everywhere. It's in all those sophisticated applications we take for granted.
It really speaks to the power of research, fundamental research, and how it paves the way for future innovation. This was over 15 years ago, and it still affects how we use technology. It makes you wonder what will shape the future. This paper, it focused on these predefined activities and gestures, but now we've got machine learning, AI. How do you think context-aware applications will evolve with those advances? What about more complex and nuanced situations?
It's a great question. The potential of merging machine learning and AI with context-aware computing is huge. Imagine systems that don't just recognize, systems that predict, systems that adapt to our behaviors and preferences. Imagine a world where technology anticipates what we need, it augments what we can do, and it just fades into the background. Those researchers in 2006, they set the stage, but it feels like the really big breakthroughs in context-aware computing are still to come.